Can we please knock this podcast out like the Joker did, or the Batman?
You're off to a great start.
Let me do this again. Can we knock this podcast out like Superman ripped out the Joker's heart in Injustice? I think that's the name of the comic book series. Yes, Injustice. Have you read that comic book series yet at all?
No, but I've played the game, and one of my buddies... He gave me a month free of Marvel Unlimited, so I know that.
Well, it's a DC comic.
I know.
Very similar. I don't care for DC. I'm a Marvel guy, but I really like this Injustice comic book series.
Okay, so in my opinion, with Marvel and DC, you know, the main differences.
I can't believe we're gonna start this argument off with this. Okay. We're gonna start the show off with this particular fight. All right, let's go.
Okay. DC has better storylines. Marvel has better characters.
I agree with that, but I disagree with the storylines. There are some, in my opinion, there are some outliers in the DC world that are extremely good, both storyline-wise and hero-wise.
Right.
Like, if you take some of the best DC and put them up against the best Marvel, I feel like they'll probably be very similar. The same thing with the characters, right? Like, the best characters match up well with the best characters in the other universe. The difference is, in my opinion, between DC and Marvel is the DC characters are the idealized best versions of people, right? Literally, their top dog is Superman, the guy who literally can do no wrong, right? Like, he walks on water, basically. Who would you say is the best, or the most well-known, most famous Marvel character?
Spider-Man.
Oh, I would disagree. I'd say Wolverine. But let's use Spider-Man.
Okay, well,
Spider-Man here is a kid. It's an accident that he gets his powers. He's constantly debating things, and he's molded by the mistakes that he made. He doesn't, like, live in this bubble of nothing ever goes wrong.
So exactly what a human is.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Spider-Man is us.
Right.
Right? Where Superman is not us, Superman is that ideal of what we should be, right? That's like in the ideal mind, in our ideal future, when we are the perfect people, where we want to be like Superman. Well, I would rather read a story about me and how it relates to me in today. That's why my favorite character is Tony Stark and has been Tony Stark for about 20 years. Is that true? How old am I?
A few years.
Damn, yeah. A little more than 20 years. I've been an Iron Man fan. So, that's just... I would rather, you know, read about somebody with real problems and real things. And I think that's why I'm drawn to this Injustice storyline. Because in the very first, and I'm going to give a little bit of spoilers for those of you who aren't big comic book nerds. The very first book of Injustice, Lois Lane is pregnant by Superman, however that worked, right? You would think his super sperm would shoot out and blow the back of her head off, but whatever. Faster than a speeding bullet. And... Joker kidnaps her, uses a combination of kryptonite and the Scarecrow's fear toxin to basically convince Superman that he had brought Doomsday back to life, and Superman goes to, like, fight Doomsday up in outer space away from Earth, you know? And it turns out that it was Lois, is what he thought was Doomsday, was actually Lois. So Superman ended up killing the mother of his unborn child and his unborn child. And that kind of drove him a little bit crazy. So he's running around doing stuff. And to me, that is a cool storyline, right? Like, right there, first thing that happens, the super great, awesome guy, like, falls. And the first thing he does after he cries and realizes that the love of his life, and more importantly, his unborn child, is gone, is he flies to Gotham, where Batman has caught the Joker and put him in Arkham Asylum, and is basically beating him, you know, not really beating him, but, you know, questioning, trying to figure out why he, what his motivation was and stuff like that. And Superman flies in and rips out his heart, like in the first book or whatever, maybe the first two books. And to me, that's just like sets the tone for a world that I would like to see what happens in. So I've been very impressed with it overall. But, Travis, guess what I'm going to say? This is not a comic book podcast.
Oh, I never would have guessed.
This is, in fact, a podcast theoretically about a Magic the Gathering.
Okay.
Wow, would you believe that? The title of this week's episode is I Ain't Afraid of No Ghosts. What do you think about that? I think that's a good title for us. I think actually what I should do is start learning to base the title of the show around whatever the rambling introduction is. But I haven't become that skilled of a podcaster yet. I've only been podcasting for like 6 years.
Well, and
quite that skilled.
You're working with me, so how often do you exactly know what the ramblings are going to be at the beginning?
I don't know, but I should be better at that. I should be able to. My experience should carry us through the day somehow, but no, it hasn't. So, Travis, have you gotten to play any Magic this week?
Yeah, I played FNM. And
how did that go?
Horribly.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So, one of the dudes that I play with, you know, he's...
Uh-huh.
He likes
I
the...
I like to play with dudes.
Yeah. He likes the idea of brewing, but he just... he always plays, you know, top-tier decks.
Mm-hmm.
So, when I told him that I was going to make a Omnath deck for Standard, he's like, well, next week is Modern. I was like, well, fine, I'll just bring it for Modern. And, well, it turned out really horribly. Just awful. I went 0-2.
What's the worst that could happen?
I went 0-2 and dropped and then played Commander for the rest of the night.
That's not the worst thing that could happen. It's up there. God could have sent a meteor to hit you after you went, like, 0-4. And could have been, never build this deck again. Pew, meteor. And then it, like, crushed your deck.
And
that would have been a story.
My whole life.
No, it was a...
It wasn't
really
the vengeful part.
Right. No, he just nuked your deck. Like, your deck was sitting there, and you're just looking at it, you're like, why, deck? Why? And just like, poof.
I think that would devastate me more because of all the money I had in the lands.
I like those sleeves. No,
dragon shields are expensive.
That's right. The dragon shields didn't stop the meteor.
Worthless dragons.
I need my money back. That's right. I should be able to sue for that. They're called dragon shields, man, not meteorite shields. I too got to play a little bit of Magic this week. I drafted. We had a pretty big group, I think, this last week. I want to say we had two draft tables that we pulled together for Friday Night Magic, so that was pretty sweet. I think I lost to Remington in round 3. Remington is my son, for those of you who don't know. And then he and my wife decided to draw in the finals, basically split the finals. So Remington's tiebreakers took him, because he defeated me, took him into first place. So, and because I was the only other person that, with that one loss, was undefeated, my family took, once again, first, second, and third. So that was pretty cool. It was a good weekend for us. Pretty good decks, I think, in the whole. I want to get to one of the meaty subjects right now. Can I do that? Can I shift us to some meat?
Yes.
You sent me a message on Facebook where someone, I think, if I remember correctly, someone challenged you to building a Zada deck.
Right. It's one of our friends and, you know, listeners of the show, Scott. Me and him were talking about just, well, the show and, you know, brewing and everything like that. And he mentioned how he built a Zada deck, but it didn't really go as well as he planned. So, okay. You know, I basically said, well, now I'm just going to start brewing because I really...
Challenge accepted?
Yeah, without the challenge part, yeah.
So, for those of you who don't know, Zada is generally considered a not very good Magic the Gathering card. But you're wrong. It is actually a very good Magic card. So for 3 and a red, Zada Hedron Grinder is a 3/3 legendary goblin ally. And what makes him pretty sweet is whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell that targets only Zada Hedron Grinder, copy that spell for each other creature you control that the spell could target. Each copy targets a different one of those creatures. So essentially, if you have like any buff spell, you can, or pump spell, you can hit that all the way across. If you needed to lightning bolt your entire team for some reason, you could do that too. Any instant, I'm just saying, if you had to, for whatever reason, you could target him with one sorcery or instant and it would effectively hit your entire team. Which is a very cool and unique ability that I can think of in Magic. Can you think of anything that's had a similar ability?
Precursor
that
Golem.
That copies your whole turn. Precursor Golem is...
You said similar.
It is similar. It hits just itself, right?
Yeah.
Like it makes two copies of itself and then it hits...
It hits all golems you control.
All golems you control.
Yeah, so if you built a golem deck, then yes, it would be...
It would be essentially the same thing.
Right.
Very similar. You're totally correct. But other than that, I can't think of how many times that something like this has happened. This is a pretty unusual ability. So, you sent me a list, and I'll let you just kind of touch on that list. But essentially, you looked at this list, or sent me this list, and I looked at it and went, this is not good enough. So then I made a list.
Right.
And we're going to compare our two lists, because that's what we do.
Okay, so mine, the only creature in my first list was Zada.
Okay.
And then I had Dragon Fodder, Hordling Outburst, Secure the Waste, and Retreat to Emeria to make more creatures.
I like it. Tokeny themed. Tokens are in a good place right now. I like it.
Right. And then let's see. Then I had Mighty Leap, which that one, you know, gives target creature +2/+2 and flying. So that'd just be amazing to give your entire team flying and stronger.
Right.
And Tandem Tactics, which says up to 2 target creatures each gain +1/+2 until end of turn, and you gain 2 life. So
the way this works is instead of targeting 2 things, you only target Zada with it.
Right.
And that copies to your target.
And then you copy it for your entire team and gain 2 life off of each target as well.
Right. I really like the idea of this card in the Zada deck because you never know when you're going to want to catch up on life. Like if you're behind, just catch up and go crazy.
Yeah.
What else do you have in here, Travis? I'm seeing an Awaken the Bear.
Yeah, let's see. Awaken the Bear, which gives, you know, target creature +3/+3 and trample for 3. Then have Might of the Masses, which gives target creature +1/+1 until end of turn for each creature you control. So I figure, you know, if the game is going on long enough, if it is, then...
Like you take 4 attackers and give them all +4/+4, that's 16 damage for 1 green mana.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
It's ridiculous. Let's see, and then I had Tygum Strike, which it costs 4. It's a sorcery that gives target creature +2/+0 and can't be blocked. And then it also has Rebound.
I'm going to say that's, I think, is the important part. The rebound, so you can get it a second time.
And then...
For free.
The reason I splashed blue into this deck was Dance of the Skywise. And
which is a spell I generally like, but I did not care for in this list at all.
I mean, it gives all of your creatures, or, you know, target creature becomes a blue dragon. Or right. Illusion. And it becomes a 4/4 that loses all abilities and gains flying.
It is a dragon illusion. So you're right both times. But yeah, essentially you're spending 2 mana to turn a creature to a 4/4 with flying.
Right.
I said, normally I would be on board with it, except I wasn't. I didn't care for it in this list.
Yeah.
And your mana base is, I don't want to say expensive, but it does have the Flooded Strands and the Windswept Heath to just try to make this mana work. You're
right.
Talking about needing red early on, double red pretty early on. You don't have to have green, but you kind of want green. You kind of want white pretty regularly, and then you want these blue for these blue spells. I just felt the mana was bad and should feel bad.
Well, I might if I cared.
Yeah. So, I took it upon myself to build a list, and I successfully put together a list that consisted of Swiss Spears, Seeker of the Ways, Monastery Mentors, Zadas, and then my spell list was Defiant Strikes, which, if you're not familiar with Defiant Strike, target creature gets +1/+0 until end of turn, draw a card. So if you're copying this amongst four things, it's a 1-mana draw 4. This is the, in my opinion, the key to make this deck work. Secure the Ways essentially is another creature. Titan Strength, +3/+1 and Scry to end of turn for red. It's right up there with the potential blowout capabilities of Might of the Masses, except it's already in the colors that you're playing. Of course, the Dragon Fodder is in there. Mighty Leap, again, I agree with you. The idea of giving all my creatures evasion as well as +2/+2 is pretty sweet. And then where I went kind of crazy is I put in 4 Teemer Battle Rages. The idea of just spending 3 mana and playing a Titan Strength and a Teemer Battle Rage and giving all of your guys...
Double Strike and Trample.
Double Strike and Trample just was too appealing to me. So basically our decks are both... The way they currently were, online, where yours was $86 according to MTG Goldfish, and mine is $99 according to MTG Goldfish.
And about $10 if you take out the lands.
Correct. In mine, that wasn't quite the case, because in mine, the 2 Monastery Mentors that I have in the list are $15 each. Mm-hmm. Secure the Ways are about $5 or so a piece. And in my original list, I ran 4, but I already had 3 on Magic Online, so I just played 3. And then I did include Windswept Heath, which I'm not playing on my Magic Online version. So, I guess, spoiler alert time, I built this on Magic Online, or a variation of this on Magic Online. And instead of Monastery Mentors, And Mighty Leaps, I cut those and I put in the Hordling Outburst, as a poor man's Monastery Mentor. And then, of course, like I said, I'm not using this Windswept Heath. So this price is actually, for me, probably $30-ish. I think from the cards I already had, to get the things I didn't have, like the Swiss Spears, the Seeker of the Ways, the Zadas, and the various miscellaneous spells, I believe I spent 2 tickets. So it could be a very budget-friendly deck, depending on how you want the mana base to work. If you don't need the Windswept Heath to go fetch your Canopy Vistas and your Cinderglade, that's the reason I did it, was so I could have 4 fetch lands to fetch either red or white, depending on what I needed. Then you can easily just get away with a little bit slower of a mana base, and everything still works just fine. So did you get a chance to play yours anywhere yet?
Yeah, I played it, and Zada never showed up out of all the games that I played. But I won because Hordling Outburst and Monastery Swift Spear still just, even if green's not in there, they seem to just overrun people. So
they can. I mean, they can come out of nowhere and just defeat people.
Yeah, Tarka Red just, I mean, really,
it's a good deck for a reason.
It's the same thing as this deck. You know, with
very similar
with the Swift Spears and the Outburst.
It's very similar. I actually played my deck most of this week's Magic stream. And I essentially, well, I shouldn't say essentially. I won every single game I played with it, except for the very last show, the very last game I played. And I was playing against a gentleman named Danny Y or Danny 7 or something like that. And I couldn't figure out how he seemed to just constantly play around what I had, right? Like, he always made the right play. He, even though I was telegraphing other stuff, he was playing around what I had, the tricks that I had. I would basically make an attack and say, okay, well, these are the worst possible blocks that can be made, and he would make them. And that didn't really bother me so much as, how is he playing around these combat tricks in my hand? And I'm one of those people that use a split screen to kind of keep an eye on the chat room when I'm streaming live. And my numbers had changed. So I was just, I think I went up to 15 or so watchers, which isn't very many until you realize that you're talking about 9 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday. 15 or so viewers on a Tuesday morning can be quite a bit when you're not Paul Cheon or whatever. And I looked over and I clicked the button and I noticed that Danny 7 was in my Twitch room. So he was ghosting me. He was watching my stream as I was playing. And I'm like, oh, well, now I don't feel so bad for getting completely owned because my opponent is playing with perfect information. So it made a lot more sense when I realized that was going on. So I feel pretty good about the deck with the least amount of money I put into it. I'm kind of inclined to build this in paper. I think this could be pretty good. I mean, I own all these cards, so it's just a matter of digging them out and putting them together. But overall, it's been a lot of fun. I'm really surprised with how, how robust this deck is and how much fun it can be.
So what we really need to do is say, thank you, Scott, for the challenge.
Exactly. I appreciate it. So that's our big main topic. Of course, those deck lists, both mine and Travis's original deck lists, will be a part of the show notes. So you can, of course, check out at samusgarobo.com or over at mtgcast.com. Shall we get into our takes, our first official look at the full release before we get the cards before pre-release day? What are some cards that stood out to you, Travis, and why?
Well, the two that I like the most that, you know, we haven't already discussed, because clearly there's others that are better. One of them is Pulse of Murasa, and I like the ability to get back, you know, a creature or a land from your graveyard, and then you gain 7 life at instant speed for 3 mana, or 6 life. So
this is definitely a Travis card. So just
it's
2 and a green for an instant that says return target creature or land card from a graveyard to its owner's hand. Not your graveyard, a graveyard to its owner's hand. You gain 6 life. I really like this card because of the potential play in team events or multiplayer scenarios like Commander and whatnot. There could be a lot of play in a card like that.
Definitely. Yeah, so, I mean, I just really like that for the stabilization and recursion effects. And then the other one that I really like, and if you, sorry about that.
It's fine. Get it all out, buddy. Get that evil out, or otherwise it stays in there.
Good. The other card that I really, really like, and it's called Seed Guardian. Because, in my opinion, there's just nothing better than one of your creatures dying and it immediately gets replaced by another creature. I think that's just, like, the best thing, in my opinion. It's basically like, oh, well, I guess we didn't do anything.
Sure. It's one of those things where you can play with, like, mass removal spells, right? When something goes to the graveyard and then it replaces itself, it gives you the opportunity to reduce your single-target removal spells and instead put in those blanket answers because you're less worried about your creatures dying.
Right.
So it gives a lot of potential. The thing I like the most about this card is I was listening to the Magic Geometry and their new episode, and Maria made a joke that I thought was very clever and I kind of wanted to steal about her new line of condoms, Seed Guardians. And I thought that was really clever. So when I saw that this was one of your cards, I was trying to figure out how to steal that joke without really stealing it. So how did I do? Did I do okay?
Good, yeah.
Okay, good. Because I thought that was really funny. It really... I don't laugh out loud very often, unless we're doing a podcast or something. So then when I see something that or hear something that actually makes me genuinely laugh out loud by surprise, it's something I want to share with people. So the Magic the Gamertron girls, if you are not already a fan of their podcast, I highly recommend checking them out. They've kind of exploded in the last probably, 3 to 6 months maybe? I'm going to say 3 to 6 months. They've really kind of exploded. They've hit a new level. They're currently writing for the Mothership right now, as well as they did a stint on the Community Cup last year, and their podcast is just doing better and better and better things. So if you're not already a fan and you like this show, you'd probably really enjoy their show as well. I highly recommend you check that out. A couple of the cards that I really like from this set. I think my favorite card, well, not necessarily my favorite card, but the one I think that hit me, let's say the soonest, is Expedite. I really, really like Expedite. It's a 1 red for an instant. Target creature gains haste until end of turn, and then draw a card. So this is somewhere is going to get worked into that Zada deck. Pretty bloody quickly.
I
think
get
it's
it
probably
haste.
Even a 4 of. Yeah, see, exactly. I keep making those haste jokes, Travis. I'm hoping that everyone's picking them up. But yeah, I'm gonna make some cuts around, put in 4 Monastery Mentors, and put in 4 of those, because that essentially is 8 one mana cards that can basically refill your hand. And that, I think, is one of the things that makes the list, the Zada list that I made, for example, stronger than your list. Because when you were just telling me that you never saw Zada, right? He, like, never showed up. And I was actually playing a lot of games where I needed to get the combo that turn, right? Like, oh, man, I need to draw the Teemer Battle Rage to win this turn. And I had, like, 6 guys out there. So for a white mana, all my guys get +1/+0, and I draw a card. You know, it's like a draw 7 or draw 8 even.
And that's why turning them into dragons is better.
It could be better. I agree with you. If you like want to make it work that way, I'm fine with it. I just really like the Teemer Battle Rage combination. And I don't want Zada to lose his ability, because I want to be able to do things like Defiant Strike my whole team, or, Teemer Battle Rage my whole team, even after I cast my first big spell. So, you know, whatever. A little bit of A, a little bit of B. But to me, Expedite is going to be a real great card. for the foreseeable future here. Anytime you can draw a new card for one red mana, plus get a worthwhile effect. In this case, haste usually isn't considered super worthwhile, but when you are playing things like Siege Rhinos with red, for one extra mana, you get that Siege Rhino haste. That can be a big game. So I'm really pretty excited about it. The most Samus card, and I think you'll probably agree with me, Travis, although I'm curious, is Eldrazi Displacer. 2 mana and a white for a Devoid 3/3 with the ability of 2 and a colorless. Exile another target creature, then return it to the battlefield tapped under its owner's control. I'm a huge value player. I love Momentary Blink ever since it came out. I'm a big fan of Blink effects in general. I think Venser is probably one of my favorite Planeswalkers. I just love this kind of value of either leave play triggers or enter the battlefield triggers. And Eldrazi Displacer, 3 mana, get it cycled around. I just think it's amazing. What do you think about this card, Travis?
Well, with that card, I did tell someone when it was first released that it worked well with the blue-white dude.
The blue-white
dude. Yeah, so basically, you know, you exile another creature, then return it to the battlefield. I forget his name. The Reflector Mage.
The Reflector Mage? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so you bounce the Reflector Mage, you know, X amount of times on your turn, and then they can't play those creatures until your next turn.
Well, and honestly, the Displacer doesn't have to wait until your turn. It doesn't have the as a sorcery clause.
Oh, I know.
You can do it on their upkeep, even.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm just saying, right. Just as an overall spell, I think that it works really well with the Reflector Mage.
Okay. I think one of the things that really stands out to me is that this guy, Eldrazi Displacer, is part of a 3-card combo to just do infinite damage. Did you see that?
I did not.
So Eldrazi Displacer plus, I think it's Brood Monitor. It's like a 6 mana.
That brings in 3 dudes.
Eldrazi that brings in 3 dudes, right?
Yeah.
So the 3 dudes can cycle themselves basically infinitely to bring that in. So then you could use literally anything, like you could use Impact Trimmers, right? That would do it.
Mm-hmm.
You could use most people are looking at it with the black guy that when a creature you control dies, everyone loses a life, you gain a life.
Okay.
You could also do like the red Outpost Siege with the creature leaves the battlefield trigger. So you could do a lot with Eldrazi Displacer and that guy in particular because they make 3 dudes. You could probably also do it with the... No, you couldn't do it with the other one. The one that costs 4 only makes 2 guys when he comes into play, plus himself, and he can't sacrifice for mana. But, yeah, the Brood Monitor, I believe, makes 3 guys plus himself, so you could set off an infinite chain with him pretty quickly. So, yeah, I'm pretty excited. I think the Eldrazi Displacer will be a really good card. Just kind of looking at the card on the MTG Salvation... It looks like he's already sitting at like $7.50.
Makes sense.
Makes some sense, that's correct. So I think of all the cards that I really want to open on the pre-release weekend, which is this weekend, so if you're listening to this before the pre-release, good luck. This is really high on the list of cards that I want to open in my pre-release still pool. Do you have any other cards that you want to open in your sealed pool? I know I haven't really worded that to you in advance, but is there anything else that kind of sticks out? I mean, obviously, there's a lot of really great mythics that, of course, you'd love to open, any of the Planeswalkers or Kozilek or anything like that. But you have like a rare that you want to open almost more than anything else, assuming you don't get a mythic.
Mina and Din, Wildborn.
The Wildborns?
Yeah,
we did talk about them last week. They're very, very good as well. Or not last week, but a couple of weeks ago. They're quite good.
Yeah, so those are definitely... That's definitely one of the rares that I want to open. Then, let's see, what's another one? That new enchantment that's just stupid beastly. Late game, the Zendikar Resurgent.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that one. What color is it?
Green.
Another green card. Go figure.
Yeah, well, it's the best color.
Okay.
So it costs...
The one that doubles your mana.
Yeah, it costs 7. It doubles your... Well, it essentially just adds an extra mana. It doesn't double your mana.
That's true. That's true.
And then whenever you cast a creature spell, you get to draw a card.
Pretty solid.
Yeah, so I mean, if you're building, you know, like an elemental deck, then, which I'm going to do, then you just cast a creature and you draw cards, you play lands, and then they double, you know, the mana that they can produce. Just overall in that deck, it's going to be good, but that's just what I'm doing.
Wow, I can't believe I just literally went like that. I'm working so hard to forget how to do that, and I just literally just did it again. Are there any of these artifacts really standing out to you? Bonesaw, Captain's Claws, Shitness Cloak?
Individually, no. But if you happen to get them with Kazul's Told Collector, then yes.
Which one is that?
Okay, so he costs 2 colorless and a red. He's a 3/2 that says, pay 0, attach target equipment you control to Kazul's Toll Collector. Activate this ability only anytime you could cast a sorcery.
Okay, so, I do know that guy. I just didn't remember his name.
So instead of, you know, if you have the Chitinous Cloak on the field, instead of paying 3 to give him +2/+2 in menace, you pay 0.
Well, you're still playing 3 for the first time, but you play less. I gotcha.
Well, no, I mean, if you just cast him, and that's already in the field, then you pay 0 to equip it.
Right, right. Well, that's what I'm saying. Still, you're still playing that 3 to put the cloak on the field, but
well, yeah, how else
you're playing no to. You just don't understand how this works, but normally you'd play 6 mana to give a creature +2/+2 in menace. In this case, you're cutting that in half to 3. That card could be quite good. I kind of like this Hedron Crawler. 2 mana for a 0/1 artifact creature construct. Tap to add a colorless to your mana pool. I do like mana that is creatures. And while it is pretty weak, I mean, a 0/1 is nothing to crawl home about, you can often make something like a 0/1... do some work because they don't expect it to be great. Let's see. I actually have a couple of the cards here that I thought were very, very good, and I kind of want to discuss with you in their idea of trolliness in particular.
Like Corpse Churn?
Potentially. I don't know what that is. You didn't put it in the show notes. Is that one of these cards? Corpse Churn. Here it is. Colorless and a black. Put the top 3 cards of your library into your graveyard, and then you may return a creature card from your graveyard to your hand. That's pretty good. I don't know if I would call that a particularly trolly card. I would call Unnatural Endurance a trolly card. So that is a black mana for a devoid instant. Target creature gets +2/+0 until end of turn. Regenerate it. I like this kind of card. Black does not get enough worthwhile pump spells, but they have been changing that lately. In Theros, we had what was it? Basically this exact same spell, right? Plus 2, plus 0, regenerate, but you lose 2 life?
Yeah.
And it was a black spell. This is colorless. So, you know, not necessarily that it could, it will come up very often, but this does get affected by pro-black things. So if... Let's put together a really crazy hypothetical scenario of you have a Elspeth, right? And they have some sort of 2-2 that's protection from black that's basically going to kill you next turn because you're at 2 life and there's no other way for you to deal with it. You can still pump this to down to minus Elspeth to get there. Again, probably not going to come up very often, but the fact that it is the void can be quite good. I just like combat tricks like this that can be used aggressively, give your creature plus 2, plus 0, as well as defensively to regenerate. If you have some sort of, you know, weenie creature that needs to smash into a siege rhino that you know that they're just going to chump with or block with anyway, this could be the thing that pushes that over. If you could... You know, take your 3-3 and smash it into their Siege Rhino and kill their Siege Rhino for a single black mana and tapping your creature. That's pretty good, in my opinion. And you could also do this on the defense as well. So this is the kind of card that I really like. Extremely flexible Magic the Gathering card. And a card that when somebody plays it and they're going to look at it and they're going, that's a bad card. Why are you playing that card? And you're like, it just beat you. So it can't be that bad. The next card here I want to kind of talk to you about is Wandering Fumarole. The reason why is I posted this when it came out on the spoiler a while ago. I put it in our little Facebook group.
And I loved it.
And I said, this card is going to be really, really good. And a couple of people in our group basically went, no, this card is terrible. And... I see their point. They have some valid points. The problem is all the man lands are great, right? It doesn't matter how good or how bad they are. First of all, the bar for them is very low because every single time you can take a resource like a land, also a mana fixing land also, and you can turn that into a creature is very, very good. And this one I think is very high on the list. The fact that it can... When it wakes up, it's a 0-4. It's difficult to remove. It's very solid.
It's a 1-4.
And a 1-4, right? That's what I said, right?
You said a 0-4.
Or I say 0-4. I was thinking for 0 mana, I think I got ahead on the ability. For 0 mana, after you've awoken it, you can switch it around to make it a 4-1. Or, you know, any other kind of power switching capabilities. So... This can end a game very quickly. This is a big finisher for like a blue-red control deck. If you think about Celestial Colonnade, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was a 4-mana attacker. It had an evasion and flying, but it cost 6 mana to activate, if I remember correctly. 7 if you count the land, right?
Five.
Was it 5? Is it 5 mana to wake up and then itself?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't play with the original Zendikar block, so I couldn't really tell you. But this is a very good card. For 4 mana, you wake it up, and you can be doing 4 points of damage if you can keep things lined. I think we're going to see this card a lot over the next year. You do have to be careful with the way damage kind of gets stacked around and stuff. Because there's no damage on the stack. That used to be... Last time we really had a big... power and toughness switching character like or creature like this, it damage could go on the stack, so you could make it a 4-1, put damage on the stack, turn it back into a 1-4, and it would live. But now we're going to have situations where it's going to have some damage on it, people will switch it, forget that it had some damage on it, and the land will die. So be careful, try not to let that happen to you.
Yep.
But I think this is a very good card. I think all the man lands or creature lands or whatever you want to call them are quite good, and this one's no exception.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the people that did say, well, it's not like the blue-black land, the one that gives unblockable.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like, well, it's not this. Well, yeah, but you're fitting it into a different deck. So it needs, it's going to be, it's going to have a different function.
Well, that, and it's a different land. It's a different card.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be unblockable. It needs to be, one of the big powers of the Izzet colors in particular is this power toughness switching ability. It just is. If you look at some of the biggest ones from the past that are in those particular colors, that's what they do. Whether you pay one mana and you add a power and you lose a toughness, or you spend zero mana and flip it, it's just one of those abilities. So to me, that land in particular does a very good job of feeling what those color combinations do.
Right, it fits its home.
Right. Speaking of home, I am the big drafter of the two of us, right? Like, I draft every week I can, and sometimes more than that. I don't do it for
more or less.
I work for it, more or less. It is part of my job. Part of my pay goes directly to draft. That is what you're trying to
say.
And it doesn't make it free.
It makes it freer than what I'm paying.
That's true. It's true. It's already part of my budget, so, because I don't have any other choice but to spend that money that way. But, so I do a lot of stuff like looking for first picks, looking for what's important, and the most common way you can do that is figuring out what common and uncommons are first pick worthy. And I think this is a first pick worthy card, and I'm kind of curious what you think. And that, to me, that card is Warren of the Geometries. Geometries?
Warden,
I think that's how you say it.
Geometries?
Is it Geometries? I don't know. I am a memorization speaker, so it is very difficult for me to, if I haven't heard something once, to try to sound it out. I can't do it. So this is 4 generic mana for a 2/3 Eldrazi drone with vigilance that has the ability of tap, add a colorless to your mana pool. I think this guy is very, very good. A 4 mana for a 2/3 vigilance creature is pretty close, and the fact that it can accelerate you on turn 5 is also very good. What do you think of this card? Is it first pick worthy in this environment? Assuming you don't have a great rare. Say like you have like a...
Or I don't have...
The white Call of the Gatewatch as your rare slot. And all of your uncommons are gold.
Okay, so let's just say that we're on pack 2. Because there's no way I'd ever pick that card first pack. First pick, first pack.
I don't like that. I don't like this scenario at all. I think this is an excellent pick 1, pack 1 card.
I wouldn't.
And the reason why is it keeps you completely open... Right? Completely open. Again, in the scenario where the rest of the cards in your pack are...
Garbage.
Like gold cards or land. Right? Your rare is not good. Your uncommons are... they'll come into play tap lands or gold cards. And you don't want to lock yourself into 2 colors. Right? So this, one, keeps you open on... colors, as well as there's a reasonable ability for the 4 mana. A 2/3 vigilance that can also, even after the turn it attacks, you can also tap it for mana. I feel like this is a very strong common for pick 1, pack 1. Pick 1, pack 2, let's say you already set your colors into, I don't know what's going to be a popular deck by then, but let's say, since it's you, Travis, green-red.
Most likely.
Right? You're already set in green-red, and you're switching to pack 1, and you don't have a good card for your deck already, then you would take this card.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes. I would not... I don't... In my opinion,
well, here's
there
a question
won't
we've
be
never
anything
really...
non-rare, non-uncommon in pack 1 that I wouldn't want to at least get out of the way.
Yeah. Here's a question we've never really discussed. Thank you, dogs. Continue barking on the podcast. I appreciate it. Are you one of the kind of people who would rather pick your deck in your first two or three picks and build around that? Or are you one of the kind of people who is more like me, where I want to float and stay open until I figure out what deck is available at my seat, and then I move into that deck?
Basically,
like there, I think there's definitely those two different kinds of people.
Okay, so when we did, team drafts, I would set my deck. You know, this is what I'm doing. But when it's just me drafting by myself, I tend to go off of, you know, the first two packs, the first two picks, I don't really know what I'm doing. And then once, you know, three, four, five cards in, that's when I start building. And then pack two and three, I try and stay as close to that as possible.
Okay, so then you're arguing for my case that this Warden is a good card.
Not pack one, pick one.
Yeah, because...
No, because I don't know what I'm doing at the very beginning of a draft. So why would I throw away a rare or an uncommon that will do something valuable when I could take a colorless card?
Well, and that's the reason that's what I'm talking about. Your rare is a junky card, right? Your rare is not good. And your commons and your uncommons are all gold cards.
Then I'll take a gold card.
Or like I said, dual cards. See, and that's where I would rather stay open. Because I'm more likely to find room in, you know, card 11 through 15 for a card like Warren or this Warden than, say, like a gold card that I'm not going to splash for. Or, like, let's say I take... Let's say you take that very strong card that is the boomerang guy, right? Get the multicolored card here. The Reflector Mage.
Okay.
Let's say I take Reflector Mage very, very early, right? My first pick.
Yeah.
It's between Reflector Mage and this guy. I'm like, well, I'm going to take the more powerful card. Done. Right? And then those two colors are not open at all. And I end up in a... black-red deck, for example.
Well,
I don't know if black-red's going to be good or not, but whatever. So then, I wasted an early pick. I wasted a pick one and pack one. Where instead, if I take like that Warden over something strong, like a Reflector Mage, and I end up in the red-black deck, then my pick was never wasted, and it's still a very high playable card. It's still, like, I'm going to say between 6 and 8. Like, if I were to pull my cards out in order in my deck, which is something else that I tend to do when I'm trying to make trims, like, this is the first card I want to play, the second card, the third card, and so on. I imagine that card would probably be in that 6 to 8, 6 to 10 category most of the time, because I'm going to want a creature that accelerates me, as well as can attack and offend. I feel like a card like that hits a lot of rolls.
Yes.
So it's a matter of flexibility and staying open.
If I was to pick a common that could ramp me, and it also did other things, and I had to pick it on turn one, or pick one,
again,
it would be Seer's Lantern.
Seer's Lantern. That's the artifact, correct?
Yep, it's the 3 mana, add a colorless to your mana pool, you can tap 2 and scry 1. I think that card
I don't disagree with you. I think this is another very good example of the kind of card that I'm talking about here.
And that card is just better than the Warden.
I would disagree that it's better than the Warden. I feel they're very comparable. They're probably... if one is better, it would be just slightly better.
Well, see, the thing with, you know, the Warden compared to the Lantern, you know, you gotta wait until turn 4 to play the Warden. Then you have to wait until turn 5 to do anything with it.
Sure.
The Lantern, you drop it on turn 3, and you can instantly use it.
Sure.
And then...
You could. If you have a ability to use a single colorless mana on turn 3.
Like Bonesaw,
yeah,
or Captain's Claws, or...
Sure, I'm not saying it doesn't
like
happen.
Like Strider Harness.
I'm just saying, I think I'd rather have the 2/3 creature for the extra one mana with vigilance. Like, for, okay, so for one more mana, you're just getting so much more.
Yeah, but for one more mana, you still have to wait an extra turn.
Sure. But for that one more mana, the question becomes, would you rather jump to 6 on turn 5, or more likely 5 on turn 5, right? Because if you have four land drops in a row unlimited, you hopefully, you know, aren't necessarily going to hit land number 5 off the top of your deck. Maybe you do, maybe you don't, who knows. Depends on what else you have in your deck. Or are you more likely to get to 3, play it, probably not be able to use that one more mana, and then on turn 4 you have 5 mana.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it comes down to where you kind of think things are going to lie. I have the feeling I would rather have the 2/3 creature. I'm curious what everyone else thinks. If you agree with me, or you agree with Travis, let us know. TwoTrollsBrew@gmail.com is our email, or of course you can send us a Twitter message and I'll go through those at the end of the show here in just another minute or two. But I think this is a good discussion. Figuring out what kind of things you pick highly and where you put it, I think is very interesting. Like I said, a good rare, obviously you take the good rare. An amazing uncommon, obviously you take it. But when you're in a situation where all the uncommons are coming to play tap lands or questionable gold cards, like Relentless Hunter. Let's say your pack is Oath of the Gatewatch, Relentless Hunter, which is a 3/3/4/3 in green and red and a colorless, and two coming to play tapped lands, like a Meandering River and a Submerged Boneyard, right? So basically, you're down to looking at your commons, really, for your first pick card, unless you want to take that green-red card that you may or may not play. To me, I think having the flexibility of being open, and I put that guy very hard on the list. I would also put your Seer's Lantern high on the list. I agree with you that it's a very good card. So I'm curious what everyone thinks. Let us know. We'd really appreciate it. We're getting a little long in the tooth. We wanted to look real quickly at a couple of the top 8 deck lists from Grand Prix Orlando. But I think instead of looking at all of them, we're just going to look straight at Cody Lingelbrock. Is that how you say his name, Travis?
Where is his at?
It's the one that I actually put the picture of in the show notes.
The Mardu Thopters.
And the main reason I wanted to discuss it was I have been suggesting playing Pia and Karin Nalar for a while now. I feel it to be a very good card that was getting very little play. And now that I look at it, this is a deck very similar to a list that I had put together a while ago. Not exactly the same, but pretty similar. And I'm curious what you think of this particular list. We're just going to let this awkward dead air sit here.
Yeah, I was looking at it.
Okay. Well, we'll just continue to let it sit here. Why wait for you patiently?
Okay, good. Because, yeah, we were just going to go off the top 8, and then you just threw that at me, so that was fun.
That's why I put that picture there.
What picture?
The whole top 8 deck list.
Oh, yeah, I guess
I put it in the show notes.
I didn't scroll. I was going, you know, one thing at a time.
That's why I even put that picture in there. I said, this is the main one I want to focus on.
That's on the second page.
It is on the second page. I'm sorry.
And you didn't say, this is what I want to focus on.
I did when we were putting the show notes.
I wasn't
paying
attention.
We can argue some more. There you go. That's more like what probably happened.
I definitely like it.
I really like it. I've been building and playing for a little while now a Mardu, I don't know, they call it Super Friends. It's a Planeswalker heavy build that also runs Monastery Mentor because he's one of my favorite guys right now. But I could very easily see switching a few cards around to make this work. Of course, it's got what I think is, in both of our opinions, the best card in Standard right now,
Mountain.
In Crackling Dew.
Oh.
I mean, Mountain is very important, but not required. I think Crackling Doom is probably extremely high on the list there.
Yeah.
I think that Ornithopter Engineer, or Thopter Engineer, is quite good when you combine it with things like Hangerback Walker and the Parents. I think it's quite solid. I'm not in love with Abbott in this particular list.
Yeah.
I think I would rather it be Monastery Mentors, but again, that's where I'd rather get my value out of, is my value, instead of potentially flipping over a card I could cast, I'd rather just get a 1-1 with Prowess.
Right, because the Abbott in this list just kind of...
I mean, it kind of works, right?
Well...
You got 13 instants and 4 Planeswalkers, plus an enchantment.
Right.
So that is 18 targets that you can hit in there. And if you play, like, say, 3 Monastery Mentors, and you make room for, like, a 5th Planeswalker or a 3rd Secure the Waste, I just feel like it's much tighter. And again, that's different people's personal preferences. But if they can't deal with a Monastery Mentor in a timely fashion, he just takes over the game.
Right, he's just the better version of Young Pyromancer.
I don't know about better. I'd say different. I would probably...
He gives all the dudes prowess.
He does give all the dudes prowess, but a whole turn slower is a pretty big deal.
Right.
I think they go together. I think they're... I like them both.
Yeah, I mean...
I like them both. I like them both a lot.
The Mentor is better, in my opinion, because, one, it comes out with more toughness. 2, it triggers off of everything that you play that's not a creature. And 3, all of the tokens get prowess. The Young Pyromancer, he just comes out one turn earlier, and he works off of instants and sorceries. So I think the Mentor is a better creature.
One is also, like, what, an uncommon? The other one is
rare.
No, he's more than just a rare, right?
Nice.
Isn't he a... I'm pretty sure he's in a mythic.
I don't think so.
Pretty sure he's a mythic. Anyway, the card that I feel is definitely missing from this list is Kolaghan's Command. I would think that those would be in here somewhere, and I don't see them. Maybe that's on purpose. Maybe the idea of flipping using an Abbott and flipping a Kolaghan's Command is just terrible. I don't know. I think I would try to figure out a way to put that in there. And 25 lands in a deck like this is pretty close, I think. I think I could probably get away with 24. But again, you're using stuff like Abbot of the Carol Keep, so you want to keep your likelihood of flipping a card that you can use high. And I think that's the problem, because this converted mana cost is quite high. With Kolaghan, Pia Nalar, Ornithopter, Gideon, Soren. Like, his mana curve sits at 4 very, very much. So you have to be able to hit those lands, especially if you flip an Abbott into a 4 converted mana cost spell. So basically, you're not safe to play an Abbott unless you already have 6 mana down on the table, which is not where I want to be playing my Abbots. I don't know. Do you have a comment on that?
Abbott is typically a early game card just to get advantage out, and with this deck, it just seems, in my opinion, it seems that a lot of the flips early game are just wasted.
Right, unless they're lands, which is, again, why he's got 25 lands. That gives him a good shot of having a land, I think, better than average for sure. But I'm a big Abbott of the Carol Keep fan. I just don't think this is quite right. But he made top 8. I don't remember. I think Reed won GP Oakland, if I remember right. Reed Duke. So I'm not really sure where...
No, Justin Nguyen.
Where Cody. No, I don't think Justin, I'm pretty sure it was...
Well, at the very top of the top eight.
Well, he was the top seed of the top eight, but I'm pretty sure Reed rallies in Oakland. Yep.
Oh, okay. I didn't watch it. I was working.
Reed won. Yeah, I watched a little bit of it, but I was mostly doing other things, too. But Reed Duke was playing Rally the Ancestors, which is another deck I really like. Although he has a few changes to the main deck that I might have to try. But yeah, no, I like this deck a lot, and I think it could do some work, I think, with just a few changes. So I am interested in potentially, because I have a deck of very similarly set up. So I'm curious, maybe I should set up the extra cards so I can switch them around on people. If I was going to, like, big tournaments every weekend, it would be something I would consider. All right, so, Travis.
See.
How do we want to end the show? What game do we want to play today?
I have no idea.
I have no idea. Well, then let's, I think my favorite game right now is the Flavor Text game.
Okay.
And let's take one of your cards that you liked. Like, let's do Pulse of Murasa. It's like Mufasa, except Murasa. And let's change the flavor text of that. So, for those of you who are not super familiar with the card, the picture, I would say it's Elf. I'm going to say possibly Nissa. Nissa, is that correct? Do you think that's Nissa?
It would be that. Or, hold on, let me go on there.
Some sort of elf, probably Nissa. Basically surrounded by branches, kind of like you would expect Groot to do in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Kind of like swirling around her.
I don't think that's a her.
You don't think that's a her? It's an elf, how can you tell? Don't you know elves are gender fluid?
Whatever.
Whatever. I'm pretty sure it's a her.
It might be.
I just get the sense that that is a she. I could be wrong.
Yeah, because you just said they're gender fluid, so...
Well, I think at this particular moment that she's a she. With the gender fluidness. I think she feels like a woman right now.
Is Tyler an elf?
Could be. Could be. If anyone would be, I think...
Our friend Tyler would be.
Our friend Tyler would be high on the list, yeah.
That makes sense.
That does make sense. See? That's a scary theory, isn't it?
Not really.
That elves are gender fluid?
No, it's just... Oh, that... I thought you meant that he was an elf.
An elf?
I don't...
What am I worried about elves?
I don't know. I mean, they live longer...
They're minus two con, Travis. Minus two con.
Yeah, but
I don't
would
care.
You really want Tyler to live longer?
Sure.
Okay.
I like Tyler. Of my list of the list of people I count on one hand that could live longer, Tyler's on that list.
Am I?
Sure. You can live long.
You're a liar.
You can live a long, healthy life. I don't care.
But would you want me to live the lifespan of an elf?
Sure.
Oh, that's horrible.
No.
I would not want to do that.
Elves never die. They just wander off.
Yeah.
That sounds great. That sounds amazing.
Just get all old and...
I'm putting all my old Dungeons & Dragons 1st edition comments in here. People are like, what are you talking about, you nerd?
That'll teach them to not be multi-nerd.
That's right. All the nerddoms. Okay, so the current flavor text on Pulse of Murasa. Little flower, twirl and bloom, arise from this your rocky tomb. Little warrior, slash and brawl, be born again, free to us all. Oh, it doesn't say, yeah, it is free to...
Be born again,
again to
free
us
all.
There you go. Putting the words in the wrong order. So it's a little, lovely little poem about a flower growing to Groot. Groot. I am Groot. Maybe that's just what the flavor text
is. I think
it
is.
I am Groot.
Oh, little flower, Groot?
Oh. Like, to me, this looks like one of those outdoor showers like you see on the tiny house places. And maybe it's because I just watched a whole bunch of these. But there's people in Hawaii, they build these outside bathrooms because it's Hawaii. So why not? And to me, this looks like a shower. So to me, the idea would be, Pulse of Murasa, where's the... you know, where's the hot water? It's a little chilly in here. Something along those lines. Like, this is clearly an outdoor shower. And she's trying to figure out where the hot and warm, hot and cold water.
She's just looking down. Oh, is this it? Nope, that does nothing.
That's what I'm saying. She's trying to figure it out.
It's like one of those light switches that's not hooked up to anything. Great.
What's like when you have you ever stayed at a hotel or someplace a little fancy and they have these complicated showers and you're like, all right, this is hot water, this is cold water.
What is this middle handle?
How does this get up to the shower? Like, what makes it go up to the shower? Or, I got it up there, but now also the bathtub's filling. How do I turn the bathtub? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it seems like the most complicated outdoor shower ever. That's what I see when I look at this card. Hot water, cold water, where's the sprinkler head? That's what I think when I see this card. All right, guys. So if you would like to send us new flavor text for Posa Marasa, like Mufasa. I'm going to keep saying that. I like that.
Pulse of Mufasa.
Pulse of Mufasa. If you like the Pulse of Mufasa.
Wait. So if they counter it, does that just mean it's dead again?
Yeah, because there'd be no pulse, right?
Great. Now my opponents are Scar.
Aww. If you would like to send us some new flavor text, you can, once again, send us an email at the2trollsbrew@gmail.com. You can, of course, get a hold of us at Twitter. I'm Samus Grobo, all one word, SamusGurobo, and Travis here is Turtle Power, 319. You can check us out at Twitch. I am Samus Grobo on Twitch. Please, if you enjoy the show and you want to see me play Magic, Tuesday mornings, 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, for about 2.5 hours, give or take. And then sporadically during the week, if Travis and I can ever, like, find a window where we're both off, we can play some Magic online together. Let's see. What else? Of course, go to samusgrobo.com for the podcast and all the show notes and everything else. And lastly, I'm going to once again get down on my hands and knees and beg for reviews. If you do enjoy the show, please stop by the iTunes and leave us a positive review, some stars. We really appreciate it. It helps us with letting us know if we're doing a good job or not. And I really appreciate it, and I'm sure Travis does as well. He asked me, he probably won't admit it, but he asked me when we start to record pretty much every week, what were the downloads?
Yeah.
Are they growing? Are we doing better? So, I know that we all would like to see the show take off really well. And hopefully here in the coming weeks, we'll be getting some t-shirts up and running and stuff. I finally got the screen printing kind of working the way I think it should work. So all that kind of stuff is coming up soon, as well as your pre-release. So good luck. I hope you all open amazing bomb cards this weekend. Any final thoughts there, Travis?
Yeah, I haven't decided if I'm going to pre-release this weekend, because...
That's not like
you. Well, I know, but Sunday, it is a 2HG, but there's also the playoffs. Saturday, I do work at 3. So Friday, even though I'm going to be waking up at like 7 in the morning to go to work on Friday, I'm debating on whether or not to go to the midnight pre-release.
Because
the only time I'll be able to play.
Well, I mean, you can't... You seriously can't play and watch the football game at the same time?
No.
For real?
For real. Mainly because I'm going to be... I've already dedicated my time to the football.
Well, I mean...
Football is only 16 to, you know, 20 weeks out of the year. And that's just one day a week. Magic is the other 52...
I'm pretty sure that's not true. I'm pretty sure there's lots of Magics every day, or footballs every day of the week.
Yeah, not that
but,
I watch.
Sure. But, I mean, you can't sit there. You don't have internet access on your phone. You can't put up the game on your phone and watch while you're playing. Like, there's no way you can multitask that. It seems unlikely.
I probably could, but do I want to be distracted from football?
Okay, well, that's a choice you got to make, everybody. Hopefully, if you're in the Salina area listening to this podcast, don't be like Travis. Come down, play Magic with us. I'll try to get the game up on the TVs, or at least one of the TVs, and come join us. I think it'll be a lot of fun. Anu, you have any other final thoughts, Travis? I know I have to work the pre-release. I have to judge in all 3 days.
Oh, really?
So the midnight, well, I might try to play one. Might try to play, depends on how many people are there. But odds are I'm just going to have to judge all 3 days.
So what are you doing? Wait, so are you guys doing a 2HG on Sunday as well?
It's not 2HG. They didn't tell us that we could do 2HG until after we already turned in the signups. So we're just doing another sealed. But if there's enough leftover packs and people are interested, we will do a 2HG. We'll do a 2HG and we'll do a draft or whatever. Like, I love 2-Headed Giant. I think it's one of my favorites. And I think we have some 2HG sealeds on the list for this particular set. I think it's going to be a really amazing 2-Headed Giant set.
Yeah, it will.
With that, I'm going to say Troll on now, and then we'll let Travis kind of stumble around and pretend like he's not going to say it for 15 or 20 seconds, and then he'll say
Troll. I definitely like Ruin in their wake. I think that's a good card that's going to be released.
Sure.
And then I'm definitely going to be playing with Captain's Claws.
Also sure?
Yeah.
I just want to point out to you this is the longest show we've had so far.
Yeah, I know. I'm gonna see how much longer we can make it. Or I'm just going to say Troll on.
Troll on, everybody.